Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Hello, this is a podcast with walking in the Australian bush with a friend, Michael, from, I suppose you're Australian, but you're from South Africa, and your expertise is somewhat in biology.
It is biology.
Okay, well, we're just talking about population dynamics and things like that. So let's just continue the conversation.
So Andrew Wilson-Birch, well-known Australian ecologist, Charles Birch was at University of Sydney, and Andrew Arthur was at University of Adelaide, I think, but they wrote this seminal work about population cycling, and they were looking at...
Yeah, I think we'll go down here. We'll just see if we can go down to... The duck hole. Well, you probably know it better than I do.
No, I can't remember this at all. I sort of vaguely remember the name from growing up here. But anyway, so they explained population cycles from weather. To them, weather explains everything that was going on.
All right.
Then by the time I was studying in the 80s, it was Charles Krebs and studied lemmings and the things that eat lemmings, you know, and also snowshoe hares, say, and wolves and actually Arctic foxes, you know, those sort of study systems, looking at the cycling of those. And the same thing has been done, you know, in Australia with Rattus villicissimus, this rat that has these explosive population outbreaks, and you've got these raptors that feed on them as well. And their explanation was that, okay, the prey cycles are driven by, they've just got an inherent periodicity.
Yeah.
So they oscillate up and down.
That is, your explosion gives you an opportunity window before the predator.
You have a baby boom. But it's calibrated by the environment. So good years and bad years.
Yeah.
But you have these good years and things, the prey build up to large numbers very rapidly after the good years, and then there's this lag to the predators, and then the predators build up afterwards. And it's actually because the environment runs out of steam, the prey crash and the predators follow with their crash. Really, I mean, their argument is that it's not about the predators. The predators are driven by the prey totally. So it's kind of like an elaboration of Andrew Arthur and Birch's concept.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really changed since then, in the last sort of decade or so, is this concept of
behavioural change.
Well, that predators really are important, and that predators are really actually driving the system in a lot of ways. And there's this idea of landscapes of fear, which is kind of what you were talking about.
Oh, right now. Exactly.
So you don't need to have
many.
You don't need to have a predator out there. What matters more is the change in behaviour due to the fear that you just need a handful of predators or very few individuals.
Yep.
But evidence that they're around. And like, I mean, we're walking through here.
No, this is exactly here. There's no megafauna where there's dogs.
Yep.
At all. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You try and explain it to a dog owner, they just... It's interesting how the behavioural aspect in their behaviour of thinking, yep, they don't see the dog owners as also being affected by dogs, not being able to think clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly, it's pretty massive. Look, what I was going to say is the landscape of fear is that the Australian bush is not a landscape of fear. There's no lion is going to come out and kill you.
But these landscapes of fear depends on who or what you are, right?
Oh yeah.
So,
but for the Aboriginals.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. For the Aboriginals, there's very little, right? There's no for them.
And
at least in the last 10,000 years. So.
And I think my analysis of the societies is that there's an external structure and there's an internal structure built around that.
Well, of course there is a landscape of fear.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you afraid of if you, what are you most afraid of if, you know, you're an indigenous person and you wander too far from the group? It's the same thing that chimpanzees are most afraid of. Are most afraid of other humans. I mean, that's the landscape of fear we live with now.
I was just having a check. I don't know whether we've... Okay, well, I was just trying to find the way down to the duck hole. It must have been there.
So there's always fear of your own species, which is often the most dangerous. I mean, for humans, it definitely is.
However, my viewpoint is, I'm just looking to see if I can see the path. That would be, I think, very bloody obvious. Because there's two grass bushes. Something I learnt off is that the Aboriginal name for the tribe in here are the grass bush people.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah,
they're Gundagara.
Yeah, Gundagara means grass bush.
Okay.
Isn't that?
That's
actually. I may not be able to. No, this is definitely not the. It may be a path down. So I don't know how this podcast is going to go with the moving, but you know, people.
So the idea. I mean, what I saw applied. I went to a conference. I'm not a behavioural ecologist.
It'll be down through that next. Next thing.
The way I saw it applied was, actually, this is particularly, I mean, it would work equally here, but say in the Australian arid zone, there's a lot of research on this, because you have these levels of predators. So at the top level in Australia, I mean, excluding humans, you know, in areas where there's low human density, where humans are not a real, where an animal has low risk of being killed by a human.
Yeah.
The top level is dogs.
Yeah.
Dingoes, wild dogs, you know. And the next level down is, say, foxes and cats, that sort of level.
Yeah.
And the next level down are the smaller dasyurids. The smaller predators.
This is something that, we're going to have to crash through here. This is something that I find amazing, that I've got so little knowledge of those. The smaller carnivores.
They get smaller and smaller in Australia. They're amazingly small. I mean, these dunnarts, which are, you know, smaller, well, kawaris, dunnarts. So you get these, I mean, things that are really smaller than a mouse, like a house mouse. And yet, the smaller they get, the more ferocious they are. I had this experience once where, I was with someone, driving at night in Queensland and been on a species survey, and they'd caught smaller than an antechina, smaller than a Smithopsis predators, and this thing got out of the bag in the car and driving at night, and they knew they'd lost it, but somewhere in the car, but they couldn't find it. And then halfway through the trip, the guy had reached down to change gears, and this little predatory marsupial leapt out from somewhere and latched onto his finger. I'm like, I got you now.
I was going to say is that this is an animal. There's animals which I think are 1 centimeter long in terms of the body. They're that small. They're as small as a beetle.
A mammal. That's a bit too small.
Is it?
The weight would be.
I thought 40 grams. Well, shit, we're going to have to crash through here eventually. I just wanted to get to the path. So my point is. My point is that it's not. There's a path up there. It's not being politically correct. It's not your argument is right. Is this is a possibility, Why don't we put it in all the possibilities and look at it? Isn't it a possibility that the landscape of fear has created basically a more inclusive society inside the Aboriginal culture? Given that my other, we may as well just pop around here. It's out there somewhere. There's a path there somewhere. One of the things is that you've got groups.
Is this the one we came down over?
No, groups. Groups coming out of expanding out of Africa,
yeah.
And on the theory that they fear each other, yeah. So that's a repulsive nature. There's it's basically colloidal chemistry.
Yes.
So colloids, the fats gather around a molecule and yeah. form a little droplet, and yeah. the fats disperse until you put renin in it. And it congeals.
Yeah.
And in a certain sense, the cities are, modern cities are congealing, but at a certain point, it becomes unstable and people hate each other
yeah.
and they move apart. And the driver of human expansion, is other humans have pushed them away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my sort of theory, if you look at the time it took for the Aboriginals, apparently the Aboriginals landed in North Australia, went one group went clockwise, one anti-clockwise,
yeah.
and met up. And there's none. We've missed the. Doesn't matter. Why not? Let's have a go down there. You've got these. I'm sort of very much interested in the internals of small groups where
yeah.
you've got a lead person and they create fear and exclusion, and one of the person's figures that you just can't send off a group. They have to be eaten by a tiger. they have to be eaten. You just can't say, oh, look, we don't want you, just go away. They just can't let me go away. I have to be eaten by a large predator and have a horrible, horrible thing in front of everybody.
Yeah.
So they go, well, that's the point. The very few things are just done, for nicety. Everything has a social point. And I just don't think, I'm gonna go this, No, well, let's go on this one. can I say one of the things that I had? I think this is the way. The beautiful flowers, aren't they?
So there's a Walter Protea,
which is.
Yeah, and like thank you. That's something. It's not like a Plogon, but it's something related to the devil.
Now. I think there is this, I have another theory
yep.
that coming up with scientific theories of things
yep.
is the next stage of evolution. So, no, like eventually, Karl Marx came up with a theory,
yep.
and that's a scientific theory, and somehow it got in the track. Now this'll have to be it.
There it is.
I'll tell you what, I was down here and there's a, well, I won't say what, there weren't sort of first fleeters, so to speak. They're out here with a trowel
yes.
and they're going to dig up, that's right. Grass trees.
Yeah.
And, you can see that this has been, burnt through. And, the thing is that they're going to, because they're so expensive, because they don't survive very long when you dig them up.
When you do,
apparently, Well, they're supposed to be ligno, whatever it is. They're supposed to, you're supposed to basically, if you want to propagate them, you've got to torch them.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, this is the way. They're the grass trees.
Yeah. I love this. This is Restio.
Yeah, so I see. I still haven't quite. I think me surviving, you know, recently, it would be absolutely insane. That's not what people who want sort of the natural order of things. You can't suddenly go and then the wildebeest gets old. Then a medical team comes in and fixes it up as good as new. Well, oh, fuck! Yeah, that's really...
Well, Peter, I mean, just about anything you and I do is anti-evolutionary. Well, not entirely. In this sense. How much... Because everything, every evolutionary idea, you have to measure in terms of your inclusive fitness, right?
Yeah.
How much are you and I going to add to our inclusive fitness from now on in our lives?
Absolutely.
Like, because not absolutely nothing, because you can help with your kids' children, right?
Oh, well, no.
You can improve the ability of your kids to have more kids.
Well, that's right, but I think there's more to it in terms of that we are...
That tends to be more grandmother stuff, but...
Yeah, no, I think we're in a new area.
We are.
We're a completely new area. That's exactly what I was saying. In terms of that, I should be dead. And
yeah, but I mean, there's no. In terms of us, there's very little evolution. There's very little evolutionary advantage to us.
The difference is if you consider the human genome biological or biotechnological. That is. So a major thing that happened is in China. Sorry, China invented lots of things, but it didn't invent glass.
Yep.
So it didn't have reading glasses, and so Europe apparently, this is, you know, one of these theories that they come up and you can't prove.
That's an interesting one.
They said that Europe suddenly got 10 years more use out of their most useful people, intellectual people.
Yeah.
If I can just say something else about, so this is perhaps, if I'm coming up with the ideas, perhaps my heart valve is the looking glass coming off. Just a few little tidbits of information. The word lens comes from lentils.
Oh, yes.
You know that, do you?
I've heard that before, yes. I can't remember, but I mean...
There used to be glass lentils, and someone picked it up going ahead. So my general theory is that people now are benefiting from mobile phones, technology...
This is not from Devil. This is an
isopagus.
So this is also a protein.
And they're natives.
Yeah. Very much. I mean, the Blue Mountain
specialty. I was just going to say is that they want to raise the...
Are you okay?
Yeah.
To go down here and
oh, yeah, I am. The only thing I'm not sure of is the quality of my shoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Isn't that beautiful going in there?
It's fantastic. I'm going to take a picture of that.
That is, it's got a beautiful natural lighting. So, apparently, on the other side of the gorge, it's actually quite dangerous because there's these holes. Yep. Amongst the grass, and the chimney, it basically shoots you out into the gorge.
Oh, yeah, okay. Huh. Yeah, that's a...
This is what you're wanting in terms of bushwalk. Oh,
absolutely.
Hello.
Incessant sort of... spotted partalote, which,
If I can say the interesting, another interesting thing is behavioural aggression not following size in terms of those small marsupials.
There it does follow size. They just get more aggressive the smaller they are.
Well, yeah, it's not as afraid of the mouse.
Because, of course, a big thing doesn't need to be aggressive. It's scary by itself. I mean, it doesn't need to be excessively aggressive. The smaller it is, I mean, the more chance it's got that the thing it takes on is dangerous to itself.
Can I say in terms of the land?
This is Petrophila. This is also another Protea.
It looks totally
different.
It looks a bit like a pine cone, almost.
I think we go
this way around because
I think it might be called
Cone
Bush.
Yeah. Oh, what I was going to say. Yeah.
I mean, by Protea, I mean family of Protea. So if
I can just make an observation about the landscape of fear,
yeah.
I think the education department fears science, and I think as a scientist,
yeah.
They see me as this vicious predator. It's a Tasmanian tiger, so to speak.
Perhaps the fear is intellect.
Or
intellectual discussion, you know?
Intellectual discussion.
Rather than bread grind facts, we drill facts in, you know?
It's more of that...
concepts and theory versus facts, you know?
They give a document to me. I look at it, pull up the metadata, see when it's produced, who produced it, word search it, and it's complete, like this complete, it's sort of like their main artillery piece is a shrubbery that you do shrubbery on. So I actually do think...
Well, maybe it's actually, maybe it's uncertainty that educate. I mean, I often think that educationalists fear uncertainty, the fact that everything is, nothing is proved.
I think that education is about credentialing.
Yes.
It's not about knowledge transfer. It's about...
Which way do we go this way?
No, I don't know. Because I used...
developing ideas and knowledge transfer. It's about credentialing.
That does look like, doesn't it?
Yes.
We are just going to be so lucky to come up here.
Yeah.
I'm relying on your... superior bush. So at night, so I go for a walk at night, and it's generally sort of location walks are all unfortunately 3 hours.
Yep.
So that's 3 hours of probably 5 podcasts.
Yeah.
But I'm just seeing, it's looking, I hope you can remember coming up. You can see the rock go down a little bit.
Yeah. I'm actually looking here for caves. This is a great shelter for cave paintings. This is exactly the sort of situation that I've been down this path at some stage before. I sort of remember it. This is another Proteaceae, this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grevillea or something.
Oh, she was, yeah.
They're just...
Can I say that I bought a grevillea?
Yeah.
And then I put... fertilizer, right? Do you think it's down here this way?
I think this is the path. This one. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we've come the wrong. I can see it's go through there. I put fertilizer on a grevillea and killed it stone dead instantly.
No, they'd much prefer tea leaves. Yeah, I mean, they want acidic soil, low nutrients.
Trying
to make it into a mushroom.
So, and now the interesting thing is that mushroom, I began to look at the molecular structure of, is it chitin? The celluloids of mushrooms and funguses.
Yeah, yeah.
And is it?
Oh, chitin. Yeah.
Chitin. It's animal, it should be animal vegetable thing. Or fungus.
Of course, fungus is a lot. This doesn't look like it could be possibly the path because there's a drop here.
Shit. It's just interesting because is it?
Maybe it is. Yeah, maybe.
Is it a rock shelf you go along?
You, the rock shelf. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's it. So this is the path. There's no way. Did I bring my mobile phone? Oh, shit. Well,
I've got my phone.
We can look. And anyway, if we're really stuck, we can walk up the creek.
Yeah.
And out. But that's... what was I going to say? Forget. If you don't want to walk in your... if you want to dry feet, you'll be there forever. It's just better to just go. I know, this is it. This is what I do remember. You know that first one we walked past?
Yeah.
I had this memory of it. Now, isn't this absolutely chock-awful beautiful? And you can see...
It is absolutely fantastic.
And you can see the creek there?
Yeah. That's one of the... I mean, that's like the Blue Hole.
Well, there's a duck hole here, beach.
Okay.
And there's a blue pool.
The blue pool, right.
Further up.
That is the blue pool, isn't it? I mean, that's...
I think it could be. Wrong. I think, no, it could easily be. And this is beautiful.
I mean, this could also be... Yeah, I mean, if we were in Southern Africa now, there's going to be Bushman paintings in this shelter. I mean, look how good it is. Look how weatherproof it is. I mean... Yeah, it's a really great place. You're looking over the stream. You've got a good view around. Resources? No. And there's dime a dozen caves. Of course,
these
caves are fantastic for it.
I spoke to a koala expert.
Yeah.
And she... Oh, can you see this? Can you see this little... That's Riverstone.
Yep, okay.
You to,
yep.
So I might give you a brief on the geology of the Blue Mountains.
I see that, yeah.
In that, I think, so, now you can correct me on these figures, but multi-cell organisms began a billion years ago.
Yeah.
500 million years ago, we had the invention of sight and sex.
Yeah.
400 million years ago, we had the emergence on land of some various things.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah,
and then so Australia separated 50 to 45 million years ago from
Africa.
But around, it's either 250 or 120, but I think it's 250 because it's the Carboniferous era.
That's the Antonian 250.
Is it 50? Is the Carboniferous before?
Before, yeah.
Okay. Well, we definitely have
So I always go on 365 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
365 million is the end of the Devonian. Well, basically, 360 million is the Carboniferous.
Ah, okay. Right. Yeah, and
about 300 million is the Permian.
My sort of worry is the Devonian is, you know, a large amount of oxygen getting into the environment, but that must have, you know, that's my head in the whole stuff. But look, at any rate, I think 360 million years ago, this was a big forest. So that's why a huge forest, because there was a huge, there's coal, the coal deposits here stretch from Wollongong underneath Sydney, popping the same coal deposit and sticking up in Wollongong. This is hundreds of kilometres thick.
Yep.
And then some sandstone.
I don't know, are they Carboniferous?
The coal.
Carboniferous or Permian? The coal here. I'm not sure, but it's across the...
Look. I'm just channeling people.
Yeah,
half a dozen people I've spoken to. And so, okay, so it's... look, I must admit, I don't know what the quality of this podcast is going to be, but I'm certainly enjoying it.
About 300 million years ago.
Yeah. Around 300 million years ago. Then, there was a uprising in plate tectonics. Now, here's the news for you. Did you know that there's no convection in the mantle?
Hello. Hang on. Yeah, hi. What have you done? No, we're just out at the duck hole. It's near the blue pool. Up the creek. No, we've just walked out straight from Hens Place and headed bush and just gone onto the tracks and we've gone straight down.
Okay, so my partner's.
Yeah.
Is it your wife you're chatting to?
Yeah. Oh, do you want me to get the kids or to yeah.
Do you want us to?
Get down to the kids. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is.
Oh yeah.
It's Mary. Okay. Because we'll be struggling to get back by 3.
Yeah.
So I'm just talking to my podcast audience. So there's a situation happening here. Fortunately, we're in.
Oh, I can do that. Yeah, no worries. That's fine. Yeah, so we're just about to turn around. Yeah. That's fine. No worries. No, I've got it. What about Rachel and Lily?
So
we're home.
So sorry, there's a bit of a gap here. I'm not going to edit it out. So we're looking at how far we can go down to this central creek called Glenbrook Creek, off from where we're at. It's quite a difficult walk back up because the path is not easily seen.
Should I go and pick Toby up from the gym, from yoga?
Okay, so we'll get there. Just having a look over here. It's absolutely beautiful
We'll walk down from where? Okay, fine. No worries. Yeah, I can do that. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
okay, Captain.
Spectacular. So, do you think we should turn around and head back? We should, yeah. So, I mean, to get back for 3, we should. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no. It's just the only problem is that it's easy coming down. It's not necessarily hard going up. I was just looking at the actual.
So, this is another. Here's another spectacular Protea genus. This is Jibung.
Oh, the Jibung. I love it.
As in the Banjo Patterson.
Yeah, the.
This is it. The Jibung Polo Club. Yeah, so
beautiful.
This is Jibung. This is Pasunia.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's sort of a very interesting tidbit of scientific knowledge floating past about Aboriginals polishing off the megafauna.
Mm.
They didn't invent the spear 10,000 years ago.
They didn't invent the...
spear.
Yeah.
Till 10,000 years ago, so...
Okay.
Prior to that, they must have just talked them to death.
Do you mean the spear or the spear thrower?
No, it's spear.
Okay, because the spear thrower of their spear thrower, which is really an efficient mechanism, is a later invention. I mean, after the spear.
Yeah. Oh, so, obviously.
Yeah. What are we going to do with it now? Well, it's kind of like a club. It is like a club. It's like an adapted sort of clubbing sort of tool that you like. Hey, look! If I throw my spear like this, it goes twice as I've got twice the power out of it, and it goes it goes further and it hits harder.
Oh, it's just amazing! And I don't know.
And the accuracy is really good.
I used to build my own boomerangs, and then very quickly began to make things called Carlies, which are killing sticks. Is a long with 7, and they're just beautiful things because they go the length of a football pitch. You think it's far, but it's only 1,500 meters. And at the end, they go up in the air, so you can see where they go.
So you don't lose it. Imagine. Look,
I throw.
Hunting here is terrible,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a low-grade environment for human life, really. I mean, in terms of getting the resources. You can't sustain a lot of people in this environment.
Oh, well, this is what I was saying about the koala. So shall we be good men and see...
Yeah. So, I mean, what are you effectively, what is the prey that you're really looking for here? Now, it should be eating frogs, for a start, but...
apparently, echidna, which is the...
Echidna would be, I mean, echidna, yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, and echidna tastes fantastic.
Yeah.
Now,
but I mean, it's like abundant here too. But possum, you're going for possum. I mean, wallabies, yeah, Europa maybe.
Or,
but here, in this environment, you wouldn't live in this environment.
Now, did you know the Europa was a volcano?
I can imagine. Yeah.
Okay, just really quickly.
It's basalt, isn't it?
No. It's got. Breccia. Breccia is the rubbish.
Oh, Breccia, yeah.
Which is basically where most rocks are gourmet.
Yeah.
Breccia is just the shit.
Yeah.
It's like chunder.
Yeah.
So, now.
Breccia is normally.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. So we have to get. It's just.
It's normally thing. It's like trap. It's things that have fallen into caves. I mean, it's like just the stuff, the smashed up bits.
Oh, it's just. Well, essentially, we get going.
You get brickier in limestone caves, where the stuff that's fallen in from the top, and then formed a sort of conglomerate.
Oh yeah, it's a sort of conglomerate. It's volcanic brickier, which is this rubbish.
Yeah,
shit. Some of the stuff you get in your vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, there's a whole lot of volcanic rocks that head that way. I mean, trachyte, rhyolite, they're pretty... I mean, they get closer and closer to the volcanic breccia, sort of, you know, smashed up little bits of random sort of ashy stuff.
You know, this is... Well, there's actually a... I think... okay. This must be it. Around Lithgow, it was sandstone.
Yeah.
Around Lithgow, formed a huge mountain range.
Yeah.
And, apparently, even though you had, bio, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The plant life went backwards and there was no plant erosion of rocks, and so Lithgow was the tallest mountain in the world the globe has ever seen. Taller than Mount Everest.
Yeah.
This is not...
But there is this kind of issue.
Yeah.
I mean, like two things. I mean, this is... My dad's always going on about this. The first one is that geologists talk about the age of rocks.
Yeah.
They don't talk about the age of mountains or landscapes because, of course, the Blue Mountains is much younger than the rocks.
Oh, well, I was going to get into my story a little bit. Oh, no.
Of the rates of erosion. If you look at a flat plain, the lowest rates of erosion on Earth, a flat plain in the desert,
yeah,
a dry area where there's, semi-arid where there's...
There's no gravity to...
And there's low rainfall, and there's, what's the main force of erosion, and there's low wind erosion, wind-based erosion, you know, sandblasting sort of erosion. You find, I think it goes right up.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. So,
Oh, you beaut. Yeah. See, this is where I'd take about... Could take 10 minutes to work this one out. Oh, yeah, that's right.
You find that...
Yep.
I'm trying to remember what it is. I mean, I think the rate of erosion on the top of Everest, which is about the highest, you know, the high rainfall, high mountain...
Yep.
And so on a flat plain.
Yeah, even so, what is it? Everest is increasing in height.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.